You are listening to another Screenfish One-on-One live from TIFF 2017. In this episode, we get to talk to legendary comedian Cedric the Entertainer. Cedric is one of the stars in Paul Schrader's First Reformed, and we get to talk about the relevancy of the church and what it is to be a good man. Welcome to the conversation. Welcome to Screenfish. Thank you for sitting down and talking with us. We're going to use this, we'll have the interview written up and podcasts and send out the just audio.
Okay.
If that's all right with you.
But no worries, man. I mean, I like it all, man. I have an amazing voice. So it's good. So I work well on podcasts.
Cedric, it is so great to meet with you. I really appreciate it. First Reformed is a great film. I was wondering what excited you about this particular film.
Well, for me, I mean, one, it was the opportunity to work with, you know, such a legendary writer and director, Paul Schrader. And then, you know, and you know, when someone, like, asked to cast me out of, you know, a comedy, when it's not a comedy, you know, it's a dramatic role, that is, it's always, you know, something because I have a theatrical background, even though I'm, you know, I've built my brand as this comedian. I love to get on the screen and find things and really dig into a character. So this was a great to be able to work with Ethan Hawke and then with Paul as well. And, you know, I didn't have any scenes with Amanda, but again, to know that she was there.
That's right, you didn't have any scenes with her. Not anything directly.
She just kind of, we like shared.
She'd walk in one door and you'd be in the other shot.
You'd do a glance.
Yeah, that's right. You mentioned working with Paul.
Yeah.
What is it that Paul Schrader brings to a script and directing a film that appealed to you so much?
It's, you know, I think it's the, in this particular script, it is the, you know, the kind of empathy that he's able to find in you know, in the despair and discovery that people have as human beings. Like, and, you know, right when we're the most confident, we're also the most vulnerable. Mm. Right when we should be, you know, at our greatest, we can easily, on a turn of a dime, be at our lowest. And it was something about this, you know, this, what I call, he kind of just would pull these small layers off, you know, religion in this movie was, you know, the main backdrop in the spiritual life. Mm. Yet he kind of, you know, he pulled the layer back. Ethan Hawke's character, of course, is going through a lot. But my character playing, you know, pastor of a big mega church, this kind where they got, you know, 30,000 followers, they, you know, church is being held at the old basketball theater. You're like, who goes to church? You know, why is that necessary for my spiritual, you know, existence, right? And now to see, like, I believe in this guy, I trust in this guy, I put my faith in him, and then I kind of pull back the layer and go, it's a business. Like, he's got corporate, you know, donors, and he's, you know, listening to them over, you know, what we want to do, and that's really real, and you know, and that's when you do question all of these things that we have to live with in the world, you know, that are these kind of big tent poles of religion, politics, education, and we kind of just follow along with them, medicine, and we follow along, you knowing that we're kind of being guided by this big corporate idea of what it is, and we tell you what you believe.
Yeah.
Interesting, you know, and that's an interesting thing to play.
You know, how do you prepare for a role like that? Like you mentioned, it's stretching, but to play the mega church pastor with this sort of subversive edge at the same time, did you have a chance to talk to anybody?
I did. I mean, you know, I'm friends with Bishop T.D. Jakes, who has a huge church and a big following. Also great friends with another minister in St. Louis, Freddie Clark, which I would sit and just kind of talk about his world, like what's it like, you know. And again, it is this thing where you are the spiritual leader. You do have all these people that come to you from all walks of life, all kinds of family circumstances, and need look at you from the pulpit on a Sunday morning as the person with all the answers.
Yeah.
Right? They assume you have every answer to their life, and that in that Bible or in your text, in the words that you're going to say, you're going to give them a bit of knowledge that's going to solve it all for them, a piece of that puzzle, right? And yet, you know, once they, you know, you close the hymnals and you say amen, now I got to run this big building. Like, yeah. I got a staff. I've got land. I've got real estate taxes. I got things that are just as important to me as your soul.
Yeah.
Right? Because yeah. in order to have all of this, I got to, you know, all right, we got to raise a certain amount of money. We have to provide these programs. And so it was interesting to see someone have to do that and still be a human. And at the end, you know, and have frailties and faults and, you know, chinks in their armor and things that you like, you know, yeah. if everybody saw that, they wouldn't, it would be like seeing the wizard, you know, you'd be like, oh, wow, you're just a person.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting you bring that up, because there's a great conversation between you and Ethan Hawke. And I just absolutely love the scene where you're saying, do you know what it takes to do God's work?
Yeah.
And there's something so real about it, but at the same time, sort of, it's wildly different than Toller, than Ethan Hawke's ministry. I was wondering, how do you feel the two characters compare? How do they differ in your mind, Toller and Jeffers?
Well, you know, again, you know, something I'd say earlier, Toller, because he needs to suffer. He takes it all on. He lost a son. He suggested a son go to the military. He loses that son. Mm. In the process, he loses his wife because he takes all the grief on and he takes all the, you know, the fault of it. So he loses. So he's a minister in a, you know, a kind of a church that doesn't really have parishioners. It's kind of a ceremonial kind of place. It's been around 250 years. So he spends a lot of time alone, and even though he's supposed to be a leader of people and one that helps, it's in that loneliness that one finds, you know, they can jump into the despair of their own existence and decide that they haven't suffered enough. Mm. And that's the difference, because I think that, you know, with Jeffries, my character, because I'm in a big organization, I'm constantly being protected or being driven to have to be something on a daily basis. Toller, you'll see these scenes where he's just there in that small room at that church, and he's just deciding he's gonna have a drink, and then he'll deny that he drank at all. And on one level, people, I think we all kind of have these things about us that we'll go like, man, I didn't really overeat, you know, today. But then you go back and you're like, well, I did eat that, I had that snack, I did this, and oh man, I ate this many, I ended up having two donuts. I don't remember doing that. But we can deny ourselves and find ourselves going into a darker place than what we think we really are. And that's the difference between these two guys. And, you know, I think it's important, you know, I was joking about that, but we, in this selfie society, when everything is about self, that this is when you find that separation of people and family and circumstance, because we spend too much time being self-indulged that we can actually destroy ourselves from the inside out, you know. I was walking down the street the other day and just saw a girl walking, filming herself the whole time, not paying attention to anything. And I was like, it's a world happening here. It's like people, you could say hello. Why is this so important?
You're right.
It's interesting.
Yeah. I'm gonna ask you an impossible question.
Okay.
All right. So brace yourself.
I have the most impossible answer.
Well, I know as an actor, you should never judge your character.
Yeah.
Is Jeffries a good man?
You know, I would say yes. You know, and to the degree that he is a man that's trying to do good.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so in the process, that do I have to do some bad things? Maybe. But overall, Jeffries is trying to do good. Even when he speaks to Toller and he's trying to get him to understand, you know, that you're always living in the garden. You're always, you know, where the despair is. You know, you never go to the mountain. You never go out and live it. You know, and I think that, you know, when you do that, yeah, you make the choice sometime to leave people behind. You make the choice to make, you know, maybe you will have an extra glass of communion wine, but it doesn't make you a bad guy, you know. So I think, and I found that up close with some of the guys I studied. Like, you know, they would, you know, we met at a cigar lounge. And you go like, well, do you smoke cigars? Is that right or wrong? Yeah, I'll have a cigar. I'll have a glass of wine. I'll sit and talk. I may even use language amongst certain friends, you know. But again, it's all in the, it's all in that part to be a human, as opposed to literally try to live on the pedestal that people put you on.
That was so that was so key to, I think, your character as well. Yeah. Is you see Toler in this church with nobody there, and then, you know, that's why I say about that comment about, do you know what it takes to do God's ministry? I really believed in that moment. He believed that that's what he was saying. Like, he, because he had all those realities you talked about.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And you know, the way, you know, in this film is being set up is that, you know, the church that Toler is, you know, a minister of is a part of the bigger church's, you know, properties, if you will. It's just it's another thing. This 250-year-old church is all kind of owned by my bigger church circumstance, right? And we honor it because it's 250 years old.
Got to keep it around.
You got to do it. What are you gonna do? You know, you keep this around. Is you know, you have these reconsecrations, and then you have someone that, you know, I know this character. You know, Toler, he's troubled. I wanted to be able to help him, and so, you know, you see that in the scene where he comes to my office. I've been knowing him a while, and I do want to be his friend. I do see that he's starting to slip. It's like, you know, come by. You know, the kids enjoyed you. They like the way you talk. Come by, come here. Get away from the that thing you, what I call it, the souvenir shop or something. But that is, so you, that's the part where I would go, Jeffries is a good man. He's trying to, he just doesn't spend a lot of time, you know, necessarily always hammering because he's got something else to do. He's got a saw too.
Yeah.
I got a sand. Yeah. So, you know, I can't hammer every day, so I can only give it to you like, boom, boom, boom. Hopefully you can fix it. I'm over here sanding. I got to fix. It's a big thing.
Well, you know, in light of that, actually, I got another question for you. And it may be impossible to answer. It's hard to know. But Jeffries Church, we talk about the actual churches themselves. You mentioned the First Reformed, 250 years. You know, it's there, sort of kept around. It's outdated, but it's there. Jeffries Church, state-of-the-art, megachurch, got all the bells and whistles. Paul inserts this, not giving too much away of spoilers, but this environmental message that sort of awakens Toler's character, that your character resists because of other interests.
Right.
I was wondering, do you feel like Jeffries' church was missing something? I mean, for a mega church they had, was there something that... I'm not talking about all mega churches. I'm not asking you to talk about those, but I'm saying with his church, was it missing something?
Well, I mean, I think from the point of view of the mega church, right? You try to look at things in a bigger picture and not so much in the micro, right?
Sure.
And so I think that, you know, probably when, you know, even when dealing with the character Ed Balk, who was like the big, you know, kind of he's the big industrialist in the movie, and he's a big donor for me, is that I have to. You know, it was one of the scenes where I was telling Paul, like, where he kind of barks at Toler, and I want to defend him, you know, and it was a thing that Paul didn't necessarily want because he wanted that scene between them. He needed Ed to challenge him. But if you listen very briefly, I go, Ed, I just say his name, like, yo, bring it down, because I felt like that's the part that, you know, you don't get about Jeffries, is that I understand what you do for me, but as a human, I understand him too. And so I would accept your, because of this organization, I can accept the fact that you're, you know, you're going to maybe kill a few people. It's sad. But
is that the tagline in the church? Is that what they put out front?
But at the sacrifice that I may have the opportunity to save thousands.
Yes.
Right? That's what Jeffries, how he looks at it. Like, if I can get more people to believe, to kind of get out their own way, and I need you and your kind of whatever it is you bring to the table, if I can, all right, if I can try to minimize that in order to do this, then he's willing to do that. That goes back to your other question. Is that a good man or not?
You know,
but again, in the spirit of that, he thinks that he's doing good. That's why he does it. He thinks that I'm going to get more people by allowing this guy to be a little bit of who he is, but it allows me to do more of what I do. And long as he keeps that to a minimal, because he's going to do it anyway, it's what he does.
Yeah, see, actually, one of the things that I felt too, I guess this is more of a comment than a question, but I really felt like Jeffries and Toler needed each other.
Yeah.
You know, because Toler, you could say, well, he needs the money to keep the church running. He needs that. He goes over and has lunch at your church.
Yeah.
But there is something about Toler that sort of balances your character out, and you could see that relationship between the two, and I really appreciated that.
Yeah, you know, and that's something, too, because I think that, you know, when anybody is, living big, you know, everything is going great. You would imagine being a minister of one of these kind of big churches where you are the head honcho.
Mm.
And to have someone that you are passionate about as a human, as you can see them, and they make you have to deal with your humanity. They raise a question, that you haven't had to answer in a long time. Mm. You know, the fact that he would even challenge a Ed Balk is a person that, yes, that puts some energy back into you, because, you know what, I'm so used to letting this guy just do what he wants to do for the sake of the business that I don't even, I don't even look at him beyond that. I just look at him as the money. I don't never even question some of his motives. I've never even bothered. And the fact that you would, yes, that is a friendship that I need, right? Because that's a person that makes you ask a question when you don't have to have questions. All you give away is answers and your opinion, because you're the king.
Yeah.
You know, and that is something that I felt in the scene. Naturally, me and Ethan, we kind of, as we were discovering on a couple of our rehearsal days, we kind of discovered that relationship, like that we knew each other and that there was a real friendship under here, even though I'm communicating like boss to a subordinate. But it's this thing that we wanted to make sure that people felt like, they actually could be better friends. They probably are friends. I wish I could see them as friends as opposed to this kind of...
The circumstances
yeah,
dictated.
Exactly.
You know,
yeah, exactly.
I mean.
And so that's why the lunch scene kind of works, too, because now it's a little more casual. We're sitting there, we're talking, and, I'm just kind of explaining my point of view, like what is going on here.
Yeah. You would have no way of knowing this, and to be honest, but I'm a pastor, so I thought it was great.
Awesome.
And I, as a pastor, I see those crises of faith. I've had those crises of faith, those questions that Toler has, and seen the other side that Jeffries has. So it's a really great film. I really appreciated it. And you do a great job.
Thank you, man. That's great. That is a surprising thing because, we early on, even when trying to find locations, we had to speak with several pastors, and it was the question of the subject matter that made one of the bigger churches that had the great location. I was friends with them. I called personally, and they made this choice that was very Jeffries. I felt like they made a choice to go, no, we can't shoot this movie here because we think that it may put a blemish on, what we sell as a religious belief. And this thing, this guy's wants to blow up the church, and he's got suicidal thoughts, and he's kind of fornicating with this girl. Like, we don't want to sell that. It was like, it's not your church. We just need the location.
Yeah, that's right.
But for them, it felt like maybe people would see their lead minister as the same kind of guy. And it was something they just thought, like, we don't want to raise that question.
Mm. That's interesting. Yeah, I could see that here. I didn't take it that way at all. I just great script.
And it was because they needed the script. They actually wanted script. They wanted script approval.
He
was like, really? And it was
the whole church did.
Yeah,
oh,
they,
that's not right.
Yeah, it got crazy.
So, oh, I should ask. I'm just interested in this. Where was First Reformed then? Where was the church? What was the location?
The location of the First Reformed, the actual First Reformed church, was in Brooklyn.
Okay.
And we shot the movie in New York, like all of New York, Brooklyn, Queens. Mainly it shot in Brooklyn.
But, okay.
Yeah, so, and this, you know, it was a great location, I think. You know, it was a beautiful old church. I believe it was actually an old Catholic church. It might have been AME.
Yeah. Oh, it had so much character. It did. Beautiful building.
And it was with the cemetery there. I thought all that was so great, and the little, you know. And one of the first shots when I got there, they were shooting this morning shot, and this is how you kind of know what the film was going to look like, was the long shot across the cemetery to the church as an establishing shot. And it's just quiet and it is still, and you realize that Paul is about to paint this picture in these long strokes, right? Yeah. And so therefore nobody has to rush to say anything. You know, you're not in a hurry to like get this message across. Let's just paint a picture. I'm just going to have the camera on you. Just take your time.
Yeah.
Say it. And that becomes really power. It takes you, as a viewer, it really draws you inside the world, you know?
For sure. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And Cedric, thank you. Your candidness and just your passion for the film and the characters is just wonderful. I really appreciate talking with you.
Thank you, man. I enjoyed this too, man. All right, man. Great. Very good.
Can I ask you a small favor?
Yeah.
Since you have that great radio voice, would you do our tagline out?
Yes, sure. We started the conversation. This was Screenfish.
Thanks so much.
Nice, right? That's good. It's very James Earl Jones with this.